forth, and I'm talking with Andre Sauvaggio. Mr. Sauvaggio, would you tell me a little bit about your background, where you were born, and where you went to school, and how you got into the military?
Surely, I will. I was born in Akron, Ohio, in April 26, 1933, and went through college, staying out of the Korean War by staying in college. You know, the rules were that if you kept your grades up to a certain point, you didn't have to go to get drafted or anything. And then,
what was your study in college?
Oh, majored in philosophy, minored in English. Was planning on teaching, but decided not to, and therefore wanted to have some more time to think of what I wanted to do graduate work in, or rather I wanted to go to law school. I just had several things to think about. I was thinking seriously of law school, going into the FBI or something of that sort, but then decided that I needed some time to think about it, and the draft board was going to draft me, and they had a shortage in the Navy. Mm-hmm. So there's a 40% chance of getting drafted in the Navy, 60% chance of getting drafted in the Army. So I enlisted in the Army to be sure that it would be the Army, and volunteered for the Airborne Division. So, you know, you get an extra $55, you got at that time anyway, an extra $55 a month jump pay added to your $75 base pay, and made it a little bit better after getting out of jump school. And I figured just on spending 3 years enlisted service, and then, you know, get out and go to graduate school. But I got interested in what I was doing enough to stay in the 82nd Airborne Division for a while, and go to their NCO school, their jungle warfare training school down in Panama, and then finally to Officer Candidate School. And then got interested in various assignments as an officer, and actually stayed in the Army until March 84, when Northrop Corporation offered me a position as their manager for international programs. And so I decided I'd retire from the Army and do this.
I understand that you're an excellent Vietnamese speaker. How did you get your Vietnamese language training?
Just studied Vietnamese. Actually, I never studied Vietnamese in a school. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's one of those strange things with the Army personnel system. I had gone through the advanced course, that is, you know, the advanced infantry course as a junior captain. And a number of us volunteered for service in Vietnam. That was in the summer of 64. Well, I actually went to Vietnam in the summer of 64, but I guess we went to the career course in 63 and volunteered for Vietnam. And the strange thing was that some people were assigned a language school, either for 3 months of Vietnamese language, a quick course, or for the whole year course. And I wanted to take the whole year course. And they wouldn't send me to any of the either of the courses.
Is that Monterey course?
Yeah, Monterey. That, there were other schools later, but that time it was all Monterey. And I wanted to go to take Vietnamese language, but they said no, they needed battalion advisors out there right away. So I got together with one of my friends who was married and didn't want to go to language school because it would even make a longer time away from his family. And we went to the personnel people and suggested they just switch us. That way I could go to the language course. I wouldn't care about it being a long time. And this guy could go straight to Vietnam, get his tour over with. But they wouldn't even switch us. And we never could understand why.
Okay.
But anyway, so I was sent over there with no language. And then I just had to get the language as I could. But I had a good assignment. The first assignment was as a district advisor. And
which district?
In Ben Chiang District. That's B-E-N, first word, then capital T-R-A-N, H, Ben Chiang District in Dinh Thuong Province, B-I-N-H. D-U-O-N-G. Mm-hmm. And that's the one, the province capital is Mito.
Okay.
And the village at Binchang is Tunhip, T-A-N-H-I-E-P, Tunhip.
Okay.
And so anyway, that was my first assignment. And of course, I was the first American to go into that district because I got out to Vietnam in August 1964, shortly after the decision had been made to put American advisors down to the district level, or as some people call it, the subsector level. Before that, they had not been lower than the province level. So although I initially wanted to be a battalion advisor, the senior advisor in the in Mito, I guess he was the advisor to the 7th Harbin Division, said he didn't need any battalion advisors right then because he had people there.
Who was
in
that?
The battalions. I don't remember his name, full colonel.
Okay.
And I just somehow don't remember his name. But anyway, he said he didn't need anybody there. I wanted to advise that 44th Ranger Battalion, as I recall. But he already had an advisor there. But you know, just a short time after I was assigned to the district as the first American advisor there, all the Americans with the 44th Ranger Battalion were killed in an ambush. The battalion was ambushed by the communists, and they lost many people, and all the Americans were killed. So sometimes people are saved from getting what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I lucked out. And besides, the district was very interesting. I think maybe more interesting because there you had the range of paramilitary operations, going on military operations with small units like the regional force units and the popular force units. And at the same time, you had the range of civic action and economic development concerns. And I think it was a better way to learn a lot about Vietnam. And my district chief,
if you want to be important, wonderful.
Liam,
if you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest amongst
college friends that had atrophied from a low achievement level. And so I had to decide, should I try to enhance what had never been very good French, or go with a brand new language? And I decided I would try to learn Vietnamese on the job.
And obviously you did.
And did, that's right.
Okay. Who was your American boss or commander became the district chief? Who was the person who did your efficiency reports?
Understand. Well, when I first went out there, remember I was a junior captain in rank, and I was a senior. I mean, I was the advisor, and I had finally some enlisted men assigned to me. Took a little time before I did, but they got a sergeant out there for me, and later some more of the team. And so at that time, initially, my American boss was a Army major who was the province senior advisor, and he resided in a villa in Mito, the province capital. And but then, soon after that, they assigned a major as the district advisor, district senior advisor. Then I became his deputy, because actually captains were considered too low in rank to be the senior district advisor. And so when they got more majors available, they put a major in there, and then I became his deputy. And but even before they assigned a major over there, I got two Vietnamese personnel assigned to me.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got an interpreter and got a driver, because at first I was driving my own Jeep, and I complained about that because I don't mind driving the Jeep, but maintaining it is something else. and you need to have somebody who knows what he's doing. So they gave me a South Vietnamese regional force soldier, a very good person to drive, and he became a very good friend. Then they gave me a sergeant, Arvin Sergeant, as an interpreter, a northerner, and he was also became a very close friend of mine. And but I just had to complain to Mito because I said, I cannot do my job efficiently without an interpreter. But my interpreter then became my first Vietnamese language instructor that gave me some system, because he taught me the alphabet in Vietnamese and how to spell and basic vocabulary drill and on and on.
What kind of programs did you start getting involved with?
Well, in the district?
In the district, right. Especially in the, were you involved with any things that, like, Frank Scotton was involved with? I had a long conversation with him for about 6 hours. Spoke very highly of you. And I don't know if you're aware of how much he likes you.
Yes, Frank and
really,
I.
Really, really, I mean, he didn't get sentimental about it, but it was obvious that he really likes
what. No, that's true. And because Frank, I owe a large debt to Frank Scotton as far as my own education in Vietnam is concerned. And Frank Scotton is one of the key people who got me interested in staying in Vietnam for a very long time. Because I always felt that if there were Americans like Frank involved with the effort in Vietnam, and to the extent that people like Frank Scotton could have an influence on policy, that there really might be some hope of winning that war against the communists. And of course I put a lot of ifs in there, you know, the extent that they could influence policy and all. But if I had to pick one person who I believe understands more about the Vietnam War than any other single person, I would say it would be Frank Scotton. I thought that then, and I believe that now. And I know that when I had questions about things that were happening or needed to double check my own analysis about a situation, I would always try to go to Frank and discuss it with him. I'd rather, because he just had such an in-depth knowledge of the insurgency. And I did not meet Frank Scott until I had was reassigned out of the district. As I say, they had moved a major mm-hmm. into the district, and I became his deputy. Then, not too long after that, that major, Major Sears, was S-E-A-R-S, was moved to some position on the staff, I think, in Metaw. Not on the staff of the province senior advisor, but on the staff of the division, 7th Division senior advisor in Metaw. And he was replaced by a Major Van der Linden in the district. Now, then I was the deputy for Major Van der Linden. Major Van der Linden, also a very good advisor, and I enjoyed working for him very much. And I still wanted to advise a battalion, so I, you know, the tour is only supposed to be 1 year, so I should have only had to go in Vietnam from August 64 to August 65.
Mm-hmm.
But in the, sometime I think in that winter, I extended for 6 months with the purpose of advising a battalion, because I didn't want to leave Vietnam and without doing that. And I had already extended, and then sometime that spring, I think in the, this would be the spring of 65, maybe about April 65, I got a very unexpected and sudden order that led me to meet Frank Scotton. But anyway, the order was that I would be reassigned effective immediately out of my district of Binchang to a special cadre training program. And I was to get transportation to Saigon the very next day, report into the United States Information Agency or Information Service, USIS, USIS. That was before it became JustPal. And I was given a name to report to, and I think one of the names might have been Frank Scott, and at least that's where I met him, because he was a Foreign Service Information Officer in the USIS at that time. And so anyway, I had to go up and report, and then I didn't have any idea what it was about, and I reminded the people in Mittal that I had extended to advise a battalion not to go on a cadre training program. Okay. But they said no discussion, because they had a special requirement and it was going to take some proficiency in Vietnamese to fill it, and I was picked because I had about 9 months in the country. I had extended, I would therefore be available, and in the 9 months I was there, I had picked up a working knowledge of rudimentary Vietnamese, and that was a requirement for the position. Now, what the position turned out to be, as Frank Scott, primarily that I remember, but I think some others explained also, also Colonel Montagu at MACV explained to me, that this program had been put together by USIS, and MACV. And the program involved training some rural political cadre. Kanbo, Kimchi, Nomphong, that's right. Rural political cadre in the art of training other cadre. In other words, they become trainer teams to train province cadre or district cadre. No, actually district. They were supposed to train cadre in various districts under the authority of a district chief to become that district chief's tool for political attitudinal surveys, public opinion surveys, but on a range of topics to do with the welfare of the people and their perception of how the war was going, and their perception of who they liked and didn't like, popular leaders, unpopular leaders, their perception of the regional forces, that kind of thing.
Is this census grievance program?
It was not the census grievance program.
Okay.
The census grievance program, the term can be confusing, because the original census grievance program was a CIA-run program that involved intensive training for people living in a village or a hamlet who would take their training in Saigon and then return to their village or hamlet and just stay in place. And it was just a one-person operation. It wasn't a team. It was one person originally. Later there was something called mobile census grievance teams attached to the 59-man RD cadre teams that were trained in Vũng Tàu at a later date than the date that we're talking about now. But anyway, Frank Scott in USIS told me that that my assignment would entail him driving me down to Long An Province, and I I hate to say it, but I can't remember which district now, but down to Long Island Province to a certain district, and introduced me to the five or six Vietnamese who were in this cadre team, who made up this trainer team, this cadre trainer team. And what it was, there were the number of trainer teams that were taking training in the various districts of Long Island Province. But then they weren't going to stay in Long Island Province. They were going to move on to different districts, and the team that I was to be assigned to was going to be assigned after the completion of its training to Dinh Thuong Province, to work the districts in Dinh Thuong. Now, the reason I was assigned so abruptly was that the army captain who had been programmed from the United States to be the American advisor with this team was relieved from that job. In other words, he had had 3 months of Vietnamese language training before being assigned to the team. And then he was relieved because, frankly, it got on his nerves. You know, it made him very frightened to be out with that team at night, yeah, with no other Americans around. And, you know, you had to sleep wherever you could find a place, maybe an empty schoolroom or whatever, put up your mosquito nets. Sometimes you get intelligence reports that there might be a VC squad in the area or something like that, and this just got on his nerves. So,
were you doing the same thing?
Yes, of course, because that was part of the job. But you know, just people adapt to things differently. You know, mm-hmm. For some people need a more structured environment, I think, or something.
My
like
interest
that.
Is specifically the psychological techniques that were used by you to train the trainers to achieve results.
Yes.
Can you speak to those techniques or, you know, within
yes, of course.
Within the program itself?
Oh, of course. Of course. When we were assigned to this, when I was assigned to this team, and of course Frank's gotten explained all about the philosophy of it and everything, I found it extremely interesting work. So interesting, in fact, that I again extended my tour in Vietnam just to try to finish the job with this team in Dinh Thuong Province. But techniques of working with the team, and I thought they were a good group of people I had there. They had a team leader. They had one person who had some training in English language, but he never had to use it because my Vietnamese by that time was about the same as his English, or maybe a little better. And I decided better to keep psychologically, you mentioned the psychology, it was better psychologically, I found out very quickly, to communicate only in Vietnamese, because that put everybody on an equal footing with the American advisor.
Okay.
If I communicated with the person who had been trained in English, he was not the team leader. You see, he was not the team leader. So that then, therefore, he would become a conduit of communication between even the leader and everybody else and the American advisor, mm-hmm. which already would could cause resentment and put him in a position to manipulate a number of things, or even if he didn't, to be perceived that way.
Had the structure of the team been arranged before you moved into it?
Yes, it had.
And what was the structure?
Well, it was, as I said, it was very simple. I'll have to think to even figure how many people were on it.
Okay.
See, it was Do Khac Ba was the team leader, Nguyen Van Lam had English language training, Nguyen Van An one of the surveyors.
Maybe six people?
Yeah, I think six at the most, about six.
Okay.
And these were rural political cadres. And the,
from Dinh Tuong themselves?
They were from, not necessarily from Dinh Tuong province.
Okay.
Some, I think, were, as a matter of fact. Some were from Long An, maybe even Saigon, a couple of them.
Okay.
But the people, the technique was this. MacVie and Jospel had come up with a questionnaire, of course, in Vietnamese language, to ask the people, and it had a lot of questions on it, you know, like maybe 30, 40 questions. And these people had to be able to memorize the questions and memorize the answers.
Okay.
And not pull out the questionnaire in front of the people.
Okay.
And not write notes in front of the people. So what they'd have to do is try to have as relaxed, casual conversations as possible with the people in a given hamlet or village.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of that house, get someplace where they were not seen, and pull out the form with the questions and fill in the answers. And then what we would do after taking one of these surveys would get together at night wherever we had to sleep. You know, typically, as I say, it might be a schoolroom or an empty office room or any place. But compile the results of these surveys, go through the surveys, and compile them on a statistical matrix.
Okay.
So, you know, so many thought that the regional forces perform fair, poor, whatever, the perception of who was winning the war was such and such, future such and such, the state of their economy, the district chief,
mm-hmm.
the village chief was efficient or incompetent or corrupt or not corrupt or, you know, whatever. A large range of questions.
Is there a way to get a copy of the questions?
I'm sure long gone.
Long gone, okay.
Long gone. It would be great to have. I wish, you know, if you had the foresight to just keep some of those things.
Long gone almost sounds like a province.
That's right, Long An, that's right. But now that I know your interest, I can, I'm just strained on time, but when I go back home, I have all these boxes that need to be things filed or thrown away and stuff like that. I could just rummage through them for some kinds of clues to things like
that.
That
would be fantastic. Frank explained to me that his driving ambition was to use these teams not just to get surveys, but to displace Viet Cong from villages. And as he explained it to me, there would be lots of times three or four teams operating in tandem, so that your team of six would go into one village, another team of six would go into another village, and they would then group together also every week or two. Were you involved in that program also of displacing the Viet Cong?
I think we're talking about the same program.
Okay.
Because remember, Frank was the person I reported into to learn about this program.
Okay.
He's the one that introduced me
mm-hmm.
to my cadre team.
Okay.
And, you know, you're saying that, Doug, just brought back a briefing, my first briefing from Frank Scotton, that I had actually, I think, forgotten about, you know, because it was in 1965 when he gave me that briefing, so it's been a long time.
20 years.
And, oh, 20, that's right, 20, 21 years.
Sure.
So, but the thing is, I remember that briefing now that you mention it. And Frank told me, basically outlined the concept that you just gave me there.
Okay.
And he told me that, I now remember, he said, you know, if we do this right, the people will perceive that we, not the communists, are the true revolutionaries.
Okay.
That it is, that if we're going to win this war, Frank said, if we have any hope of winning this war, the only way we can is if the people come to understand legitimately, not by some kind of phony manipulation, but understand legitimately that we and the government of the Republic of Vietnam are the forces that are truly dedicated to social change,
okay,
to giving them an equal, more equal opportunity, a stake in the society, so that they have, you know, their self-interest has to be identified and enhanced by our efforts, and that's.
Knowing what I'm interested in, did you also set up ambushes and go after Vietnam?
No.
Did you do any of that?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Let me. You're asking the right questions. Right? Look, these people, this trainer team, was had no. Arms, actually.
Oh, okay.
It was unarmed. And
how did you defend yourself?
Well, you use passive security. What that means is, the technique we used was to get into. First of all, we tried to sleep in a secure area.
Okay.
You know, say like sleep maybe in the district capital.
Okay.
Or something like that, or at least an area that had established security. And then. We would target a hamlet for our survey of the next day. When the daylight came, after road security had been established, if that was something that had to be done by the paramilitary patrols or whatever, then we would go to that hamlet. And by passive security, the idea was you got in there, got it done, and got out before the communist intelligence picked it up that we were there, or that an American was there, and became a target.
Okay.
Now, sometimes we did get a district to lend us carbines if we felt we needed them, or something like that. And then sometimes they would assign a squad of popular forces to go with us. A district chief would do that for us.
Okay.
If he felt that the situation wasn't safe for us just to go in with passive security. It was very situation specific.
Okay.
But our mission in no way entailed paramilitary operations or anything of that sort.
Did you have any experience with paramilitary operations prior to becoming part of this program?
Well, I did, because I came out of the district where
okay.
we had the regional forces and the popular forces.
Okay.
And
but so you were comfortable walking through the Vietnam at night? You knew how to.
Oh yes, because
I had, you know, I mean, you're an infantryman, and
but basically I was infantry anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my basic.
Okay.
So we had, of course, with just regular infantry training, you have plenty of training in night operations
okay.
and things of that sort. And actually, if we didn't, we should not have been assigned to the things we were assigned to, because as American advisors, the idea was to
mm-hmm.
enhance
mm-hmm.
the training and operational capabilities of the Vietnamese forces that we were dealing with. And you know, we couldn't be expected to know more about Vietnam than they knew, because obviously we would know much less about Vietnam than they knew.
Okay.
But we could be expected to have basically a good command of standard military tactics and military practices. Noise and light discipline, proper dispersal, flank security on an operation, the correct use of artillery, calling for artillery in situations, providing a air cover for some operations.
So you would have had a radio man on your team too?
I did in the district, but not in this survey team. I was really out of communication with Americans on the
very interesting
on the survey team.
Because of the limited time, I'll have to skip a bit. How did you get involved?
Come back again.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Because you're going to have to.
I think so.
If you want to go over all this.
I do. If we can arrange the time.
Sure.
Okay.
It won't always be this way.
How about your meeting up with John Van? And,
all right, I met with John Van, I think after getting out of this, I met him sometime, I think, through Frank Scotton, when I was still involved with these survey teams, the survey trainer teams.
Which I assume then also training of other people.
Yeah, what we did, I followed him for a long time. What we did when we were, when I joined them in Long An Province, at that time, our own team was simply learning to become efficient or proficient in the in conducting these surveys.
Okay.
So because they had to themselves become a proficient team before they could train others.
Okay.
And so at this time, they were really trainees, not trainors, while they were in Long An. But once they got their graduation certificates. Once they got their graduation certificates from the whatever authorities granted these.
Was it through Vung Tao?
No. We're way before Vung Tao now.
Okay.
And went before they, when they got these graduation certificates, then the team I was assigned to deployed to Metol. See, once the graduation was over, and there we had to introduce ourselves to the Dinh Thuong province chief, Colonel Phuc, Lieutenant Colonel Phuc, as I remember, and he was the, and I knew him already because I knew him when I was assigned to the district. He was still the province chief when I was when I was district advisor, and later deputy district advisor.
So he was the province chief.
He was the province chief, Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Phuc, and so I made an appointment with him to explain about the cadre team that we had that would go from district to district in his province, with his permission, of course, and that we would hope that he would give us some entree with the district chiefs so that the district chiefs could see way to give us a place to sleep. They could also, more importantly, that they would assign some of their cadre to take the training course that we were prepared to teach.
Okay.
And that when we moved out of the district, when we moved out of a given district, we would be leaving in place a team to conduct public opinion surveys under the authority of that district chief who originally assigned to us to train.
Okay.
And that we would weed out people who were incompetent, who didn't have the personality for it, who didn't have a good enough memory to memorize the questions and the answers. In other words, it was going to be hard work. But we would hope to leave in place an instrument by which the district chief could keep a better handle on what people were thinking about various things and hopefully adjust his personnel policies and the implementation of his pacification and development programs accordingly, based on what he found out.
Okay. How would you describe your success in Dinh Thuong?
Well, we trained, some of the time we worked out of the province capital in Metaw. We had a base in Metaw, but we'd also go out and stay in district capitals where we're working in a particular district. We did train a team, as I recall, in Chagao district, and I don't think we ever did my district, Ben Chiang. No, we never did Ben Chiang, apparently. It was on our list. We intended to do all the districts in Dinh Thuong, but the program was cut short.
Okay.
So we never finished. Even though I had extended my time, I extended an extra year just to try to finish these districts. But the program was killed, along with almost all the other cadre programs throughout Vietnam, to pave the way for a much more comprehensive national cadre effort, which was called the RD cadre program, or the Americans called it Revolutionary Development Program cadre, or in Vietnamese it was actually Rural Development cadre. But in any whatever name, they were the this was the cadre program that was to be implemented in Vung Tau at the National Training Center.
Okay.
And the concept was to the base was supposed to be the 40-man PAT team, which was a paramilitary armed team. PAT standing for
Political Action Team.
That's right, Political Action Team. And graft on 19 specialists,
okay.
As I recall. And some were census grievance. There was a census grievance team, a new life development team,
okay.
Several specialized teams. And the idea was then, behind this 59-man team, RD cadre team, was to marry up the best virtues of the PAT team, which after all had 40 people on it and was armed and therefore could provide for its own security,
yep.
And therefore could operate in villages and hamlets without being intimidated by a VC squad.
And these are the outgrowth of Scott and his people who were going in and actually displacing Viet Cong.
Right, that's
yeah,
right.
Okay.
That's sort of,
okay.
That's right. You know, this thing was just taking those concepts and putting them on a larger scale.
Okay.
And then, also I think it became realized that it was wasteful of personnel, an inefficient use of human resources, to have a large number of disparate cadre groups.
Yes.
And, you know, some of whom may have had, as in the program I told you about, some specialized abilities, but no arms, or too small to go into an insecure area. They had to have too much security to go in.
Couldn't go into areas controlled by the Viet Cong.
Yes, that's right. But other teams might be able to get there, but they might not have the specialized skills to do much when they got there.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is put the two together.
Mm-hmm.
Have a 59-man team that had competent specialized personnel along with people who knew paramilitary operations, had a sufficient number of people,
okay.
And arms to conduct them.
It's a universal program.
Give them universal training at
okay.
The National Cadre Training Center in Vung Tau, and then... Anyway, that was the concept, and that's what started to take place up in Vung Tau.
What time is that? When is it that then you moved?
1966.
Okay.
And
at that time you get secunded to Tom Donahue over at Vung Tau. Is that?
Well, what happened was just at the end of 65. or the beginning of 66, something in there, in that time frame. Of course, when they killed that cadre training program, the one I was involved in...
Did that have a name?
Must have had. But as I say, it was just... But it was a training program for rural political cadre. Okay. The cadre teams were rural political. Kanbo, Chinchi, Nomtong. Rural political cadre.
Okay.
But the... But anyway, what happened was that when they killed this team, I already had some more time to do in Vietnam because I had already extended again.
Okay.
And so I thought my first idea was to try to get a Vietnamese battalion to be advisor to a Vietnamese battalion. But
still pursuing that.
Yes. So I went in to see the senior advisor. At that time was Colonel Sid Barry, and later General Sid Barry. But anyway, but he was... the senior advisor, and I reminded him that I had extended in Vietnam more than once, and I still did not have advised a Vietnamese battalion. And so he said that he would, if I insisted on that, he would certainly put me into a Vietnamese battalion. He promised that to me. But he said that he wanted me to know that the embassy had already told him that they would like to have me assigned to Vung Tau as a advisor, like a political officer, a political advisor to the National Cadre Training Center in Vung Tau to assist with the with implementing the new RD cadre training program, and that Colonel